This article appeared in the winter 2009 issue of UU World magazine and is available online at uuworld.org. From the editor, we are not alone. Unitarian Universalists sometimes see themselves as the all-too-small religious opposition to the religious right. The perception sets us up for disappointment, since there are so few of us, and blinds us to the presence of allies in many other traditions. It also miscasts Unitarian Universalism as a political movement. Social witness is an important part of our religious tradition, but it is not the only part. Two articles in this issue illustrate the point that Unitarian Universalism is not alone on the religious left. Harvard Divinity School's Daniel McKinnon argues that religious progressivism has deep roots in American history and a real opportunity to make a difference as the power of the religious right wanes. The Religious Left, page 26. Meanwhile, Scotty McLennan, a UU minister who serves as Dean of Religious Life at Stanford University, has published a book called Jesus Was a Liberal, which makes a case for a theologically and politically liberal Christianity. In Breath is Life, page 33, he offers a Christian rationale for abortion. That's something you don't see every day in the public debate about abortion. UU World business manager Scott Ulrich explains on page 10 that the magazine erred in accepting an ad for the fall 2009 issue from the Freedom from Religion Foundation that seemed to mock all religion, including Unitarian Universalism. Some readers have mistaken Ulrich's apology, which we published online shortly after the fall issue was mailed, as evidence of hostility toward non-theistic UUs. The magazine does not discriminate against advertisers or writers based on their theological opinions. It exists, however, to promote the UUA's principles and serve its mission, and we believe that ridicule is hard to square with acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. We mourn the death of the Reverend Dr. Forrest Church, our friend and frequent contributor, who died September 24th, 3 years after he was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. In honor of his contributions to modern UU theology, we reprint what is undoubtedly his most famous passage, the Cathedral of the World section from A Chosen Faith, the introduction to Unitarian Universalism he wrote with the Reverend John Burens, page 18. Church completed his 25th book just before he died, a collection of his theological essays entitled The Cathedral of the World. A review appears on page 56. An obituary appears alongside those of several of his colleagues on page 53. Finally, we thank our intern this fall, Eric Furstman, for his diligent copy editing and his contributions to our weekly blogs, Unitarian Universalists in the Media and the Interdependent Web, uuworld.org/blogs. Learn more about our internship program at uuworld.org/about/internships.shtml. Christopher L. Walton, Editor, world@uua.org. From the new president, what moves you? I once had a fantasy of giving everyone in my congregation a stole. It was not a practical idea, so one Sunday I resorted to giving everyone an imaginary stole during my sermon. The point I was making was that each of us has a ministry and that we have a ministry together. More importantly, I truly believe that each of us needs to find that ministry and act upon it in order to be whole. We usually think of our needs in terms of things we want to receive from others. Nurture, respect, understanding, love, support, yet we also need to give. I want to be clear. We don't just want to give of ourselves. we need to give of ourselves. One of the great lessons of all religious traditions is that we only find ourselves when we lose ourselves in service to something that transcends us. We think of people coming to a congregation because of their spiritual needs. True enough. Yet one of the greatest needs people bring is a need to give of themselves. When I served as a parish minister, it took me a while to fully appreciate this. However, as I spoke with hundreds of people joining our church over the years, I came to see that their need to give was perhaps the greatest need of all. As we spoke with people at our new membership classes and after they joined, we heard over and over about how they wanted to find a place in the church where they could roll up their sleeves and get involved. This need to give expresses itself in many ways. I remember one woman who had a passion for connecting with the elders of the church. She wanted them to feel connected and respected. She loved to hear their stories. What a gift she was to our church. I know others who feel called to human rights work. The pain of the most oppressed people in our world calls to them, and they work tirelessly for compassion and justice. I know a number of adults who love children and find joy in nurturing our children as they grow. I am convinced that we too often fail to recognize how much our children, youth, and young adults need to give. Hanging out is not a spiritual practice. Joining hands to work for something we care about is. Service is an essential part of faith development. We need to do so much more to engage the idealism and energy of our young people. If this movement we love is going to thrive, we absolutely must help all our people find their ministries. This is not about doing something out of a grim sense of duty. This is about helping each other get in touch with what we truly love, what truly moves us. What moves you? I mean, what really touches you at the very core of your being? Are you called to comfort those in pain? Are you called to help make worship a more moving experience? Is music your ministry? What will you do when you let love guide you? What do you need to give? Imagine your congregation where the love, idealism, passion, and energy of its people are unleashed. Imagine your congregation helping all its people join together to organize and direct their shared passions. Imagine our entire movement when all this wonderful energy is unleashed. Find your ministry. Put on your imaginary stole. Give yourself away. May our deepest love guide each of us and all of us. Peter Morales, President, Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. Mailbox by Jane Greer. Over the last 2 years, we received 59 letters per issue on average, with letters reacting to articles, ads, current events, and covers. But this is the first time that an ad has drawn more response than any other part of the magazine. Out of a total of 76 letters, 27 addressed the Freedom from Religion Foundation ad on the inside front cover of the fall 2009 issue. The ad also provoked a flurry of blog posts. See page 12 for a summary. Joel Monka of Indianapolis, Indiana wrote, "I have nothing against the Freedom from Religion Foundation buying ad space in concept, but that specific ad had no educational value at all. It consisted purely of quotes insulting any person of faith." UU World business manager Scott Ulrich issued an apology September 4th, writing, "While the stated mission of the Freedom from Religion Foundation is entirely consistent with UU values, this ad seems hostile to all religion." See Ulrich's letter, page 10. Then, reactions to the apology started to arrive. Kaylee Hardy of Glenwood Springs, Colorado, wrote, I thought UUs weren't afraid to have their beliefs questioned or challenged. I'm a member of both the UUA and the FFRF. I don't see any contradiction. Of the 27 letters, 14 criticized the magazines running the ad, 13 defended the ad's presence in the magazine. Our mailbox also contained 6 letters about Michael Doral's forum article, Reach Out to Become a Public Church, 4 letters about Kimberly French's profile of the Reverend Carlton Pearson, a black Pentecostal bishop who converted to Universalism and urged his followers to join a UU church in Tulsa, the Gospel of Inclusion, and 4 letters about UUA growth issues. Jane Greer is senior editor of UU World. Letters. Carlton Pearson. I just finished reading Kimberly French's piece on the Reverend Marlon Lavenhar and Bishop Carlton Pearson, The Gospel of Inclusion, Fall 2009. Wow! What an inspiring story of the challenges of the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Lavenhar says it all. If we don't make this kind of thing work, we're in jeopardy of becoming a small, parochial church that appeals to just a tiny slice of the NPR audience. Amen, brother. Jane Middleton, Richmond, California, UU Church of Berkeley. As a lifelong UU, I was deeply moved by the Gospel of Inclusion. It was great to see how a really, really white church was challenged along race and class lines. More important for me was how the church was challenged on spiritual lines to welcome a pro-Christian view. One aspect of having grown up UU is that I don't see the Christian church as something innately oppressive. Based on the stories I have heard from fellow UUs who grew up in oppressive environments, I understand why people feel that way, but it doesn't mean Christianity should be completely rejected. It would be great if UUs could wrestle more openly with this issue. At some point, we need to get past the knee-jerk rejection of all things Christian in order to really grow and thrive. Paul Bennett, Brooklyn, New York, Unitarian Church of All Souls. General Assembly. Shame on you! Initially, I was in disbelief, then outright angry upon seeing the inequity in the captions under the 4 photos in the General Assembly article on page 41 of the Fall 2009 issue. 3 of the 4 captions referred to the professional contributions that the 4 very talented individuals brought to GA. Why couldn't it have been the same for the Reverend Mary Harrington? Your caption, referencing Harrington's diagnosis of ALS and the accommodation that was made for her, was thoughtless and totally irrelevant. Harrington came to GA to preach at the service of the living tradition and to offer her skills and talents just as the others featured in the photos. There was absolutely no need to reference anything but that. Patty Cameron, GA Accessibility Coordinator, Winchester, Massachusetts, Winchester Unitarian Society. The editor's reply, you're right, and we're sorry. After working with my church for 3 years to have the Statement of Conscience on Peacemaking adopted by the 2009 General Assembly, I was extremely disappointed that the Assembly sent it back for refinement. This statement should have been passed immediately. Don't you remember how many years America was bogged down in the quagmire that was Vietnam, followed by the vast desert of Iraq? Now the folly of war is pursuing us up the jagged mountains of Afghanistan. Let us do what we can to make it known that our denomination does not support war. Charlene Petrie, Portland, Oregon, East Rose Fellowship, UU. Public or private? In Reach Out to Become a Public Church, Forum, Fall 2009, Michael Doral correctly notes that we are not public enough in our congregational life. However, I would disagree with him that a free and responsible search for truth and meaning is an internal search. I believe if this search is responsible, then it must be outward and publicly focused. The search for truth becomes the grounding for our individual values, but unless these values are lived fully in our lives, they are indeed meaningless. By living our values publicly, we accept responsibility for those values. The Reverend Paul Langston Daly, Pottstown, Pennsylvania, UU Fellowship of Pottstown. Michael DeRaul makes an excellent case for our congregations becoming more public. Even though I agree with much of what he says, my issue is how he relegates the spiritual needs of the congregation to secondary status. One reason congregations often talk a good game around justice issues, but don't always follow through, is that we do not tend to our spirits, either individually or as congregations. When we seek justice without a foundation of the Spirit, the justice work can be, and often is, unsustainable. For me, it is always a question of balance. When we tend to our spiritual lives, seeking the truth that fills us with passion for life and for our fellow humans, that passion can then guide and fuel our work for justice in the world. The Reverend Rob Moore, Keller, Texas, Pathways Church. UU Growth. Unitarian Universalism has a core message beyond our current vital work for multiculturalism and pressing social issues. Individual conscience, personal spiritual quest, and felt connection expressed as compassion in the world. But some people are finding this message insufficient and are advocating what is essentially a corporate model of growth for growth's sake to make the product more attractive to more consumers. UUA President Peter Morales speaks of growth as a moral imperative akin to feeding the hungry. From The New President, Fall 2009. Really? Why? To share exactly what message? In another article, Michael DeRaul, Reach Out to Become a Public Church, Fall 2009, suggests that we jettison our fourth principle, stating that a free and responsible search for truth and meaning is the quintessential private spirituality and may be detrimental to future growth. But other denominations and organizations already do equal, if not better, social work than we do, so why would someone bother to affiliate as a UU for that reason? Isn't it our bona fide religion, grounded in weekly church services, the faith that honors both reason and the spirit that makes Unitarian Universalism our denomination of choice? Ellen Lawrence Skagerberg, Santa Rosa, California, UU Congregation. Controversial ad. The content of the Freedom From Religion Foundation ad on the inside front cover of the Fall 2009 edition implies stupidity and gullibility on the part of people of faith. The many in this world who derive comfort, guidance, and joy from their religious beliefs. In my opinion, the contempt conveyed in this ad is in depressing conflict with the UU World's mission and with our denomination's goal of loving, open-minded inclusion. R.S. Villanueva, Sarasota, Florida, UU Church of Sarasota. I was delighted to see the FFRF ad. Welcoming these kindred spirits is in keeping with UU World editor Christopher L. Walton's From the Editor column, if Unitarian Universalism is to offer a religious home as broad as our message, we will have to learn to stretch. In fact, it's not even much of a stretch. Thoughtful atheists, agnostics, and humanists have values and support goals nearly identical to ours. Separation of church and state, women's rights, marriage equality, human responsibility for saving our planet, and so forth. Chuck Berry, State College, Pennsylvania, UU Fellowship of Center County. The FFRF stand is beyond atheism or agnosticism. The organization advocates an anti-religious stance, which seems to be in direct contrast to the very purpose of UU World as a magazine for a religious movement. I stand in the pulpit week after week and look out at the faces of good people who are striving to live their lives in accord with the teachings of our great and historic faith. Shall I tell them that this free faith is not worthy of their devotion? Including this ad in the pages of UU World would seem to send such a message. The Reverend Cecilia Kingman, Seattle, Washington, Cascade UU Fellowship. I find a disquieting values discrepancy between the FFRF ad and the article, The Gospel of Inclusion. I fully agree with the sentiments of the quotes in the ad and strongly support separation of church and state. However, I find the ad divisive. It divides the world into us and them, we, the enlightened atheists, versus those who believe in something we don't. On the other hand, the gospel of inclusion is just that, inclusive. Even though I cringe at the words God and Lord, I feel included and that I would be welcomed. Herb Foster, Princeton, New Jersey, UU Congregation of Princeton. As UU World's business manager, I am responsible for all aspects of advertising in the magazine. We've received letters from people representing the entire range of opinion about whether the Freedom from Religion Foundation ad should have been published and whether we should have communicated, as we did, that it was a mistake to publish it. UU World's role is to promote the UUA's mission and principles. Our advertising policy states that we seek advertisers whose missions and goals are consistent with the principles, goals, and practices of the UUA and its member congregations. Consequently, it says we reserve the right to reject advertisements that are inconsistent with the UUA mission, the nature of the magazine, or the editorial and visual integrity of the magazine. The problem with the ad was not the advertiser, and it certainly was not the ad's support for the rights of atheists. The problem was that this ad negatively and very broadly characterized religion and faith in ways that were guaranteed to sound to many of our readers like an attack on Unitarian Universalism. For UU World to publish an ad from an outside organization condemning religion is inconsistent with the UUA's mission to serve its member congregations. UU World does not have a policy of excluding non-theistic points of view in the advertisements it accepts or in the articles it publishes. As many people pointed out, atheists and agnostics are well represented in our congregations. But tone matters, and the tone of this particular ad conflicts with the UUA's commitment to the acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. This is why, in hindsight, I concluded that this particular advertisement fell within the range of ads that, according to our policy, should be rejected. In retrospect, this controversy would have been avoided had I worked with the advertiser to craft an advertisement that invited people of like mind to support them without using polarizing language about religion in a religious publication. Scott Ulrich, Business Manager, UU World. Blog Roundup by Kenneth Sutton. Many people discuss Unitarian Universalism and UU World stories on blogs. Find links to the blog entries mentioned below by visiting uuworld.org. Click Current Issue, then select Blog Roundup. The Reverend Tony Lorenzen at Sunflower Chalice thought everyone should be exposed to the story of The Gospel of Inclusion, our fall cover story. The first lesson is that of universalism. It's a grand lesson to revisit for Unitarian Universalists and a great idea for non-UUs to be introduced to for the first time. A loving God doesn't send people to hell. The second is the point made by the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt at the Berry Street Lecture, and I paraphrase, UU culture is keeping us from being multicultural. SunflowerChalice.com, September 8th. UU Dave Belden, meanwhile, praised the story on the Tikkun magazine blog. Tikkun.org/Tikkun Daily, September 13th. Many bloggers weighed in on the Freedom From Religion Foundation ad on the inside front cover of the fall issue. Ministers were very quick to take to their blogs. Barry's mom, a UU minister, was the first to post, "I am stunned, appalled, and very disappointed." Barry'sMom.blogspot.com, September 2nd. The Reverend Cynthia Landrum critiqued the impact of the ad. "You open up our denomination's major publication, and what you see first is an advertisement that seems to be saying, 'What are you doing being a Unitarian Universalist? We'd like to free you from that.'" RevSin.blogspot.com, September 4th. Recently fellowshipped minister Earthbound Spirit gives the ad credit. "I'm not surprised the FFRF uses clever and provocative quotes for bus sign advertising, and you've got to admit, they're catchy." Earthbound.spirit.blogspot.com, September 4th. A number of UU bloggers saw the uproar and the subsequent statement by UU World Business Manager Scott Ulrich as rejections of their own religious identity. Jacqueline Wolven of Moxie Life wrote, "I am disgusted. No, disheartened. No, just plain frustrated with people. Yep, most people. Why do a few squeaky wheels get what they want?" Goodwolf.blogs.com, September 12th. John Frank at Under the Ancient Oaks thinks, "The real tension in Unitarian Universalism isn't between theists and non-theists. It's between those who find meaning and value in traditional religious language, stories, forms, and practices, and those who are so offended by their association with conservative religions that they don't want anything to do with them." JohnFrank.blogspot.com, September 5th. Chalice Chick wrote about the diversity within atheism. "We all get that there are a billion types of theists, but that there's quite a lot of theological diversity within atheism, too, seems to elude people." ChaliceChick.blogspot.com, September 17th. A number of non-UU atheist bloggers noted the controversy. A September 10th post by Hemant Mehta at FriendlyAtheist.com is notable primarily for the comments it generated. Greta Christina defended the decision not to run the ad in future issues. "Would it be reasonable for the magazine of an atheist organization to reject an ad saying, 'Atheism is immoral. Atheists will be condemned to hell if they don't repent. The only true path is the path of Jesus'?" GretaChristina.typepad.com, September 14th. Timothy Mills, an atheist and Unitarian, agrees. "After all, despite what some thin-skinned atheists are claiming, the ads do attack religious belief." FriendlyHumanist.blogspot.com, October 2nd. Mills' post generated a reply by Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the FFRF. "Our ad was not an attack on the UUA. It was an espousal of the views of most Unitarians. Perhaps the infiltration of the UUA by new members who are not free-thinking, who do not really understand its creedless position, accounts for this mind-boggling reaction." Traffic Report. Top 10 online. Most frequently visited stories on UUWorld.org, July 6th through October 4th, 2009. Number 1, The Gospel of Inclusion by Kimberly French, Vol. 2009. Number 2, The Interdependent Web by Kenneth Sutton and Eric Firstman, our weekly blog about UU blogs. Number 3, Death Barged In by Kathleen Sheeter Bonanno, Fall 2009. Number 4, Message or Culture by Doug Mooter, August 17, 2009. Number 5, General Assembly Narrowly Rejects New Principles and Purposes by Christopher L. Walton, July 6, 2009. Number 6, Carolyn McDade's Spirit of Life by Kimberly French, Fall 2007. Number 7, UU Wins Military Chaplain of the Year Award by Michelle Bates Deacon, August 17, 2009. Number 8, Unitarian Universalists in the Media by Sonia L. Cohen and Eric Firstman, our weekly blog about news. Number 9, Army Wives features UU Child Dedication Ceremony by Michelle Bates Deacon, August 10, 2009. And number 10, Reach Out to Become a Public Church by Michael Dural, Fall 2009. Kenneth Sutton is the managing editor of UU World. What in the world? Abortion, the religious left, and Christmas ghosts. Questions for Spiritual Reflection and Adult Group Discussions by Jane Greer. Partners? In his Forum article, Religion and Science Can Be Partners, Bruce Scheiman argues that religion and science are actually compatible in that they arise from the same urge toward progress, transcendence, and salvation found within the human spirit. Page 14. If Scheiman's partnership model were accepted, how might it change religious and scientific institutions? How might atheism be accommodated in this model? One Light. Forrest Church describes the world as being like a giant cathedral in which we all live in different parts. We are all illuminated by the same light, although it comes through different windows. A 21st century theology based on the concept of one light and many windows offers to its adherents both breadth and focus, he writes. Honoring many different religious approaches, it only excludes the truth claims of absolutists. That is because fundamentalists claim that the light shines through their window only. The Cathedral of the World, page 19. How would you compare your theology with this concept of one light and many windows? Christmas Ghosts. In Ghosts of Unitarian Christmas, page 22, Doug Mooter updates Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. Instead of visiting Ebenezer Scrooge, the three ghosts of Christmas's past, present, and future visit Ben, a crotchety UU. What three people in your life might have something to tell you about your Christmases or other holiday celebrations, past, present, and future? How have these celebrations changed over the years? What do you want your celebrations to look like in the future? The Religious Left. Daniel McKinnon identifies four clusters that comprise today's religious left. Religiously motivated groups of grassroots activists, such as the Catholic Worker Movement. Groups formed around denominational bureaucracies, such as the UUA's Washington Office for Advocacy and Witness, which focus on legislation. Groups based on liberation theology, and the broad group of spiritual but not religious people whose social activism is spiritually based. The Religious Left, page 32. What prevents these four groups from working together? What could make them into a more powerful and cohesive force? Abortion. Scotty McLennan makes a Christian case for abortion by examining the question of when life begins. He reviews some of the different theological positions put forward by Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish theologians and argues that life begins at birth. I'm personally compelled by the notion that it's the breath of life that makes us full human beings, he writes. Breath is Life, page 37. When do you think life begins? What are the religious or ethical grounds for your support for or opposition to abortion? A Child's Murder. Kimberly French profiles UU poet Kathleen Sheeter Bonanno, whose 21-year-old daughter was murdered by a former boyfriend. Unitarian Universalism played an important role in Bonanno's recovery. "Being Unitarian Universalist, I don't want to live in hatred," Bonanno says. "I do believe men in prison have the possibility of redemption here on Earth, and I do feel peace and comfort in the fact that the former boyfriend was arrested and found guilty." A Poet's Grief, page 41. Unitarian Universalism's first principle affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. How can we affirm the worth and dignity of victims of violent crimes as well as the perpetrators of those crimes? Has forgiveness been an important part of your life? Saving Utes. In "Unitarians Worked to Save Ute Indians," Sonia L. Cohen describes the failed attempts by 19th-century Unitarian ministers to civilize and manage the Ute Indian tribe, which had been assigned to them by President Ulysses S. Grant's administration. At the 2009 UUA General Assembly, UUA President William G. Sinkford offered an apology to the Utes on the UUA's behalf. "We participated, however ineptly, in a process that stole your land and forced a foreign way of life on you," he said. "We ask for your forgiveness." Page 64. What effect might an apology offered 150 years after an event have? Jane Greer is senior editor of UU World. UU World is the magazine of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. This recording is made possible by the UUA Department of Communications and the UUA Accessibilities Office. I'm Dick Hill. I'm an audiobook narrator, and my website is www.dickhill.com.